We're going to continue what we are calling the love series, specifically verse 3, and I've entitled this, What is the balance in your love account? I want us to think about our personal lives, and I'm going to talk to you today about what the definition of love is. I think we're sort of missing a definition of love. I think it's a little bit more than maybe we're accustomed to thinking about and acting upon. So I think we need to do that today. It's very important that we don't major on the minor. It's so easy in the world today to major on the minor and not major on the major, to find ourselves existing and operating far below our potential. And I hope this series is a step in that right direction. A businessman accompanied Mother Teresa throughout her day for a whole week in India, and watched her minister to the homeless and to the poor. On one particular day, she happened upon a man who was laying in the sidewalk beneath a pile of rags, and she kind of cleared the rags away and noticed that the man had some wounds that needed to be dressed. Not only some wounds, but some wounds that had gotten infected and began to put off a rather displeasing odor. So as she is on her knees on the sidewalk tending to this man, the businessman is watching, and it's kind of uncomfortable for him. He says to her, I would not do that for $1 million. And she said, no, sir, neither would I. Neither would I. It is a kind of ministry, one to another, that comes out of a love rooted and established in God. And if we don't understand the definition of love in our culture, our marriages, our children, the foundation of our culture and the church, we'll be ill-prepared to live up to our potential. What does it mean to love? What is your motivation in life when it comes to love? I did a funeral in Atlanta on Friday of a man that I've known some years who wasn't probably in church every Sunday, to say the least. He did accept Christ as his Savior, but in his retirement, he chose, and love is an action verb, he chose to go to his son-in-law's welding shop and serve and volunteer every Thursday for 17 years, and almost every Thursday that he was in that welding shop, he shared lunch with his adult daughter, and they split oftentimes a salad or a sandwich together. He was loving. He was acting upon that love. And we need to get a grip on what this is all about from a biblical standpoint. All right, so I'm going to look at three definitions of the word love that are in the Greek language. There are others, but just three today. Some of it's a review. But we're going to take a look at, if we love in our life, what kind of love do we have for our wife, our children, our nation, our church, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren? Well, how are we loving? Okay? What Greek word would best be descriptive of the love that we actually use in life? The first one is the word eros. Now, eros is about probably the only really main word they used back in Bible days to describe love. Eros is not in the New Testament. Now, this is odd. Eros was the most often used word to describe love, but not in the New Testament. Make note of that. Eros begins with I desire. Eros begins with I. Eros is Eros love, and it is on our culture and mind today because of the fall of man. I desire, I search for, I long for. Eros reaches up to another to pull another down to meet our personal needs. Eros is about our empty void places in our life being filled by love for someone or something. It is a relationship in which we love with an Eros love to complete ourselves. For without that thing, without that activity, without that person, without that Eros love, we are incomplete and do not know who we are. Eros love. This is what the Romans used, Eros love. This is how the Roman government operated, Eros love. Eros is about me. Hollywood has a good grip on Eros love. Country music songs are big on Eros love. Eros love is fleeting. It's discriminatory. In other words, at 10:30, 11:30, 12:30 at night in a bar. Eros love is active, but maybe 12 to 14 hours later, it's gone. Eros love is fleeting. It discriminates. In other words, Eros love is imparted and enjoyed on some at the expense of others. And any time that we love with an Eros love, it's going to cost somebody else something. But it's going to gain us. Eros love is about me. Me. And oftentimes, it's possessive and it uses, if we're honest. This is the love that people in the New Testament day were accustomed to talking about. It was normal. It wasn't abnormal. It is at the detriment of others. An Eros love is at times an infatuation that doesn't go away, that completes you, that eventually leads, like Proverbs 7 and 22, we get bewitched by it. We get caught up in it. We lose our judgment over it, and we're just kind of like led like an ox to the slaughter. Proverbs 7 and 22. It kind of takes us over at times. We lose judgment. We lose things. We lose possessions. We lose our family. Eros love. It's not good. Religion can be Eros love. A religion that discriminates, that alienates, that chops up people and categorizes them and puts them in some sort of spiritual caste system. An Eros love puts one person more important than another, one person worthy of love more than another. An Eros love says, I wouldn't do that for $1 million. Eros love. And then there is, of course, phileo love, where we get Philadelphia, brotherly love. This is good. We need this. We need brotherly love. We need people in our life like Jonathan, Saul's son, and like King David. They were like a band of brothers. They had a mutual respect for one another. They had open, transparent communication. They knew one another. They knew one another's strengths and weaknesses. They were brothers together in the Lord. Phileo, a brotherly love, a deep, abiding friendship. We all need this. Man, we all need this. Bad. More than an analyzing of our golf swing. We need someone in our life that we can talk with, be understood, and understand someone else. Phileo. This is interesting. Peter betrays Jesus 3 times. Jesus is risen from the dead. He meets him on the seashore. Some of you have been to that seashore with me right there. And he's cooking breakfast, and here they come. And it's time for Jesus and Peter to have a talk. And Jesus looks at Peter, and he says, Peter, do you agape me? And Peter says, yes, Lord, you know that I phileo you. I have a brotherly love for you. And Jesus says, Peter, do you agape me? And Peter says, yes, Lord, you know that I have a brotherly love for you. So finally, Jesus says, Peter, do you have a brotherly love for me? And Peter says, yes, Lord, you know that I have a brotherly love for you. Peter was so far from agape, it wasn't funny. He wanted a gang member. Another friend. And Jesus let him know in uncertain terms, I understand the brotherly love thing. I didn't ask you that. Not once. And not twice. What I asked you is, do you have an agape love for me? And his answer was obviously no. So Jesus let him know in the future how he was going to die. He says, your arms are going to be stretched out and you're basically going to be crucified. Said another way, you're going to enter the school of love and you're going to find out what agape love is all about. In fact, you're going to demonstrate it. Very interesting. So what does this mean? What is my job? What are we doing here? Our job is to make disciples of one another. What is a disciple? A disciple is one who loves with the agape love of God. Not just phileo, and certainly not eros. What does that look like? If I was going to rate the rest of this message, I would say it's probably PD, potentially disturbing. PA, potentially awkward. But very true. You see, back in the day, the word agape existed, but it was in a dictionary about this thick. No one ever used it. No one ever said it, and most people didn't know what it meant. It just was in the dictionary. If you're going to talk about love, talk about phileo, talk about eros, no one knows what agape is. Have you ever come up, when you're coming up in your life and certain words came up and no one knew what they meant? Like, I'm looking at you now, I'm trying to think. Sometimes I wonder which of you were hippies. Remember, there's one, there's an honest woman. There you are, in the back. Proud to be a hippie. Groovy. Remember when that came out? Nobody, what was that? Groovy. All right, if you really old codgers, 23 skidoo, what does that mean? No one knows. Far out, groovy, bad, fat. Fat doesn't mean fat anymore, and bad doesn't mean bad, it means good. Or did they change it back? I don't know. But agape, when Jesus would walk about starting to talk and teach and talk about the love of God, he would say agape. They're like, what? What did that dude say? What is that? What is agape? I don't know. Let's go home. Look it up. Let's go find out what it means. Because he wouldn't stop talking about agape this and agape that. Interesting. It's a Greek word, and it's love at its ultimate. And it's what you and I are called to enjoy, to receive, and to impart to others. Agape love. Your spouse is desirous of agape love from you. It's not about me. It's about you. It's a sacrificial thing. It's the love that your wife's looking for that comes out of husbands love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Agape. It's agape love that brings you to your knees to wash another's feet. It's agape love that puts you on a cross to die for the world. For God so agape'd the world, he gave his only begotten son. What kind of love is this? This radical, non-cultural love that we are to walk in and enjoy, the agape love of God. Jesus wants to know to Peter, do you agape me? Paul wants to say, who can separate us from the agape of Christ? Jesus says the two greatest commandments, agape the Lord, your God, with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and agape your neighbor as yourself. This is our quest. You see, eros reaches up to pull someone down to meet your personal needs. Agape reaches down to pull another up, or reaches out to pull another in. This is what we're called to do. You know, in the next 3 or 4 decades, 5 decades, $70 trillion, $70 trillion, more than 3 times our national debt will be transferred. That wealth transfer will take place over the next 30, 40 years over to the next generation. What will the next generations do with the absence of agape love and the presence of $70 trillion? Start playing around with those numbers. What will take place in the history of the church with a church that may have an idea what agape love is, may be walking in it, may have an understanding of it, but it certainly hasn't yet got to be infectious? What is that younger generation looking for today? The younger generation, your grandchildren, my children, your children, you know what they're looking for? They're looking for the agape love of God in the church. Why do you think we had all those college students here for that vision casting rally? So that they could see another church, which they're told all the time, churches are no good, you don't need to be in a church, the church is all about, it's all about this, all about that. They needed to sit in a church, worship with another generation, a cross-generational kind of worship experience, where one church raised $500,000 for the younger church. That's why, in part, we did what we did. There's 600 college students down there that can't say what most people say about the church because we're right there with them. That's agape love, sacrificial love. That's a love that changes the future, agape. Agape love is dangerous, man. It really is dangerous, and it calls us to places we don't want to go, and it causes us to look at things we don't want to look at. Why did the rich Pharisee, with his eros love, invite all those high-fluentin' people to his home for dinner? What's his motivation? It's a great investment. Invite 20 people over for dinner, knowing that you'll get 15 to 17 invitations to go out and eat at their home later. It's a great payoff. Eros. Pharisees would get up in the morning and say, thank God I'm not like other men. Eros versus agape. Eros discriminates. Who do you discriminate against? Who is it by our actions is less important than another group? I've been around long enough in ministry to see various presidents take the Oval Office, as you have. Eros love discriminates. And since I disagree with that policy, it doesn't matter whether it's a Republican or Democrat, that's not the point. And since I disagree with that policy, I don't like that person, I'm going to talk behind their back, I'm going to put them down, I'm going to elect someone else to get in office. So the other half of the nation can talk behind his back or talk to his face, put him down. Where's the agape love? Where's the church that prays for the president no matter who it is? That's what this younger generation is looking for, an authentic church that doesn't discriminate, but walks in the agape love of God and prays as the scripture says. It's the agape love that prays for the mule running the drugs across the border, wall or no wall. It's the agape love that motivates a man to pray for a president, regardless of who it is, who's so far in above their head, it's not funny, as anyone would be. It's the agape love that actually doesn't do what everyone else does. It does what very few do, because it doesn't discriminate. You know, the rain falls on the righteous and the unrighteous. And the sun rises on the righteous and the unrighteous. The agape love understands that. Doesn't have to like everything, but obeys out of love. Jesus says, you obey me because you agape me. Most people are trying to obey to be loved. He says, no, you obey me because you love. So it brings us to verse 3. If I give all I possess to the poor, and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, do not have agape, he says, I gain nothing. Some of your translation says, I am nothing. He says, you want to talk in the tongues of men and of angels, and you'll be a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal, he says. You want to give all you have to the poor and do all that kind of stuff? Fine. But if you don't have love, you don't have this agape love, you know, it's nothing. It's nothing. I mean, nothing. So let's look at it. Here's the dangerous word right here, I. If I give all I possess, let's keep the I out of it, shall we? You and I are called to do three things as disciples. Pray without anybody really knowing it, anonymously in a closet. Fast with oil on our heads so nobody knows what we're doing. And give anonymously so we don't draw attention to ourselves. That's what we're called to do. First sermon ever preached in public by Christ. You and I don't possess anything. We steward things. We manage things. Everything belongs to the Lord. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. And by the way, what in the world would happen if you gave all you had to the poor? What a dumb thing to do. Guess what? You'd be poor. First of all, Jesus says you're always going to have a poor among you. You give everything you have to the poor, then you're poor. Why are most people poor? Most people are poor because they didn't steward their opportunities well, or they didn't budget well. That's usually the case. If you give all your money you have to the poor will lose it, and then everyone's broke. If the whole church gives everything the church has to the poor, the church is broke, and there's no revenue stream for the future. We're all just sitting around looking at each other, waiting for the money to run out. God's economy says give your first fruit, give your tenth. Keep 90% for your family. Take care of your needs. Enjoy. Go on vacation. Have a good life. Give your tithe. We'll keep a revenue stream for the people who need help. We'll share the agape love of Christ. Sometimes I think people look at us like we're like a bottomless pit over here on the hill at Community Bible Church. We're no bottomless pit, my friend. I can assure you of that. If I give all I possess to the poor... Well, when it comes to the poor, first of all, everyone in this room is rich compared to anyone else in the world. I can assure you that. I went over to to Nepal in February and met with a member of parliament. We were invited to his home and sat in his living room, bodyguards and soldiers and all kind of stuff going on. I was like, what is this? You know, I felt like I was like being interrogated or something, until the tea came out and then some crumpets, you know. So you start eating. And the head of the parliament there was wanting to thank our church for our gift for earthquake relief. I thought, wow, cool. Him being Buddhist, representing the Hindu party, me being Christian, and everyone in the group looking at me like I'm going to say something, really awkward moment. He wanted to know what my response was to his thank you. And I said, well, like you, I said, I know you have a deep respect and appreciation for your own people, and you want their needs to be met. And I know that that tragedy was surely horrific. I didn't say to him that you categorize it as 7.9 earthquake, because if it was 8, the government would have to give more money. I didn't say that part. But I said, we give out of a heart of glorifying the Lord. And if occasion arises in the future when we can help as well, we will want your people's needs to be more important than ours. And I think that man had a greater appreciation for the home ministry that was hosting us, because he saw that what we did out of love. So I go to one of the villages, and 2 years had passed, and the village was basically decimated. Still temporary housing being used by some people. And I happened upon this family where the husband had been gone for 2 or 3 days working in some field somewhere, who knows where. And the woman was there with a little boy who was about to get kicked out of his Christian school, one of the few in the area, for back payments, $30 a month. And someone asked me, he said, would you give a devotion to this woman? I said, no. To give a devotion? I'm packing about $1,200 in my pocket from CBC money. I'm not going to give more than a devotion. Come on. Now, I'd already met a man in town who lived in a house that was leaning like this, had cracks in it, could fall over at any minute, but that's where he crawled every night with his wife and kids to on the lower floor to go to bed. Never mind the fact, on the right side of the building, some non-governmental organization to come in and build a brand new house for his neighbor, and on the other side was a brand new house for that neighbor, and here this guy is. They just ran out of time. He's got this lean-to looking thing, brick that could fall on his family any minute. It's crazy, isn't it? Anyway, I pulled out a wad of cash and I gave it to the woman, and I don't think she could do the math quick enough to figure out in American dollars what she was just handed. But it was enough to put her kid through a master's degree, let alone a Christian school in the last couple of months. That was a genuine need. The Bible says if you're not willing to work, you don't eat. You got to be willing to work. We're not looking to give handouts. That's why we're trying to help those people down in Cullowhee. Put something together in their life to walk with them through that situation. You got to know what you're doing when it comes to the poor. My wife and I were in the Via del Corso in downtown Rome, about to walk into a cathedral, and we saw probably the millionth gypsy woman that we had seen that week, and she was sitting outside the front door of the chapel there, holding her baby. The wind's blowing. She's got the blanket over the baby, and she's rocking it back and forth. And my wife, who has the gift of discernment, I'm looking for some kind of euro or something. My wife's looking, like, peers over and sees that the woman's holding a doll. Discernment. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship, that I may boast, but I do not have love, I gain nothing. I think you need love. I think you need common sense. He says, if I give my body over to hardship, even the flames, and I don't have love. I think the number one thing that we have to do as people today in the church is we have to figure out, am I walking in? Am I being firmly established in? Am I gaining more of, as a result of sermons or devotions or whatever, a deeper agape love? That's what it's all about. It's the bottom line. Am I getting a more sacrificial, less self-serving, more other-focused, bring glory to God love in my life? Am I communicating that? Am I demonstrating that? Am I mindful of that? Or am I walking in a love that the culture has, that discriminates, that separates, that evaluates, that manipulates, Because when the two become similar and we don't know the difference between the two, we become like an ox being led to slaughter. There's not a subtle difference between the love that the church is called to impart and the love that the world actually talks about. It's a vastly different thing. Can you love people you don't like? Can you love your enemy? Now, I don't have time enough today to go into how that actually happens, but we'll get to it before this thing is over. We're called to something pretty high. This is a pretty high calling we got here. What's being asked of us, we cannot do. This Eros thing, you can do it with your eyes closed. You can give lip service to most anything out there in the world. It'll pass as love. You can put it in a song, sing about it, write a poem about it. But when you come to agape, oh, there's something totally different going on there. You've got to pull that out of the dictionary, and you've got to start explaining to yourself what this is. There is a love for me from God that doesn't discriminate, does not discriminate against me because of my sin, because of my attitude. That this love comes my way from the cross that is just full of liberty and grace, and it's unmerited favor that's placed upon me. I cannot tell you in my life when I have been more blessed than I am right now. And I cannot tell you any time in my life, but I've been more mindful of the fact I'm undeserving of the blessings that I have right now. That's the agape love of God. The agape love of God gets loosed in a man's heart, the gratitude grows. The generosity expands. The confidence in oneself is rooted and established what God has done, not what other person can give me. And I don't care about a person's political party, I can still love them. And I don't really care who's president, I can still pray for them. I got news for you. You will find yourself, speaking from experience, gossiping less, putting people down more, and joining in on conversations you have no business in if you pray for the person being talked about. It is a high calling. It is a high calling. While we're here, look at your marriage. Are you giving more to the other or taking more for yourself? In reality, a marriage should be a competition between two people trying to love the other more. Has Eros creeped in? Me. My needs. Sir, you do not rule your household with an iron scepter. You would do well to realize you need a towel and a basin. Agape love. I say this is important, but I'd be Captain Obvious. I'd say this is everything, and I'd be pretty close. God is agape. What you need, what I need in relationships, I can only get from God. I cannot count on broken people to heal my brokenness. I can't count on sinful people to complete me. I'm sinful enough. I cannot count on fractured people and fractured relationships to meet my needs when they cannot meet their own. You cannot rely upon businesses and possessions and people to complete you when they themselves are totally incomplete on their own. We cannot make gods out of one another to meet one another's needs, but we can ask for God to do that, and in so doing, make that relationship much more mutually respectful and edifying and enjoyable, filled with laughter and peace and purpose. We cannot be bewitched and conformed to the pattern of this world, finding ourselves longing for something we just cannot grasp or find in life, apart from the agape love of God. Which brings me to this point as I close. If you are here today and there's something in you that says, I don't necessarily deserve the love of Christ or the forgiveness of God, I would have to agree with you. Nor will you ever. You've missed the point already. God's love is agape love. And he doesn't discriminate against you in any way, shape, or form. He is your biggest fan, and he is for you. So much so, he died for you. And what you need most is the forgiveness of your sin and the freedom of walking with a clear conscience before he who created you and allowing him to pour that unconditional love into your life so that it seeps out into other people's through you. You need to be saved. You need to be born again. You need fresh legs, fresh start, fresh vision, fresh perspective. The old man who lives for himself, the Eros man, needs to eventually die and become new in a new life with Christ, the agape man. Where God leads and guides you in the purpose for your life, and he overwhelms you with his blessings and agape love.